Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
We got mail.
We did.
Reader mail. Michelle from Ham Lake, Minnesota, a local reader, local listener.
I love mail.
Michelle says, I enjoy the BrightPath podcast. It lets me use a completely different part of my brain and challenges me to apply the ideas to various organizations, not just items of crisis management, but even everyday team operations. As I read accounts of the Minnehaha Academy explosion, and I thought about kids going back to school, would you consider doing a parent-focused episode about how to talk to children and how to practice with children prior to events? Our schools train our kids, but do we ever follow up? Do we think about how our children would respond to a crisis in a way that helps the adults who manage situations?
So thanks, Michelle, for sending that in. We'll talk about those things. This is actually really relevant because those of you that have not been paying attention, there was an explosion at the Minnehaha Academy.
This is a charter school, a very large and well-regarded charter school in Minneapolis.
Yes. It was very scary, although it was 7 months, so there weren't that many people around, fortunately, but there were some fatalities.
Right. So it's like they were moving. There's an initial report that just came out this week. This explosion happened a few weeks ago now, but it appears that they were doing some gas line work in preparation for moving gas meters, and something caused a leak in the gas line. The gas, of course, filled the building, and then in the process of some people trying to effect an evacuation, there was an explosion that resulted in some significant destruction of a large portion of the building and a couple fatalities that were a result of that. So it's a really timely topic,
yeah,
given what's happened here in Minneapolis. And I think that was story was covered nationally.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And I think at least one of the fatalities was due to some rubble collapsing on them. And it's just really a very unfortunate situation.
It was tragic. The school is relocating, it sounds like, to another city while the building is being rebuilt as a result of this tragedy.
Yeah, and it's a historic building too, I believe. So
it is.
It's really unfortunate on so many levels. So this topic comes up, and we'd be happy to talk about some of these things that you've asked us to talk about, Michelle. So
it's a very difficult topic because as a parent, it's really hard to think about my children who are still very young, 4 and 6, having to go through the kind of situations that their parents have seen.
Yeah.
Since my wife and I both work in crisis management and in this overall field.
And I think while we're taking care of ourselves, oftentimes the little ones can get forgotten at bringing them in. So very important topic. We'll talk about a few things here, maybe what to talk about in preparation during an incident and then after an incident. How about that?
So let's start with what we know happens here in Minnesota from a school standpoint, because in her email, Michelle referenced that. And I'm sure every state has some requirements in place for planning and exercises or drills, as schools tend to call them. But there's three types of drills that are required here in Minnesota for all K through 12 schools, public or private, to do. And that is they're required to do fire drills, and they have to do 5 during the course of the school year. They're required to do lockdown drills. So this was enacted after the Columbine school shooting incident in Colorado.
And 5 of those too, right?
5 lockdown drills. What's interesting to me is they're not really active shooter drills. They're lockdown drills. Yes. So it's not the run, hide, fight that we think of today. It's just the hide.
Yes.
Part of that. And then lastly, they have to do a tornado drill and only one. Because we are here in Minnesota where we have a lot of tornadoes during storm season.
Tornado Alley.
And then we even had one in the winter this last winter.
Which is a whole other podcast in and of itself.
Winter is its own problem.
Yes.
But you know, Michelle points out that there are drills and our kids learn about crises from this standpoint in school. But how many parents take the time to think about as we've talked about family and personal preparedness, how many parents do this with their kids?
Or maybe even know that they do all these drills. I mean, that's 11 drills a year.
Yeah.
That's
out of the 6 months or so that you're in school from September to, I guess it's 9 months, September to June.
But still, that's a lot.
So as we talk through this, you're going to hear us refer to the term multiple times, and that's going to be just age-appropriate involvement and messaging, because when you're thinking about disaster planning and exercises or practice drills with your kids, there's a huge difference between when your children are young and what you want to tell them and the level of involvement you want them to have, and when they are teenagers and young adults and they can be more involved and take on more personal responsibility. So we're going to talk about that a lot.
Yeah, we're not talking a specific age as in a number, as in what year is it appropriate to talk about certain things, because each child is different, right? Mm-hmm.
So that you really will need, those of you that are parents, guardians, you'll need to decide what that is. So as we think about preparedness, we've talked before about personal and family preparedness, and we absolutely believe that children should be a part of that process in your home as you make those plans or build your kit. But there's a couple guiding principles that we think are important through all of this. The first is that, just to be honest, that instead of trying to use fear to drive them in the course of preparedness, just be honest about the threat. And I think about my four-year-old, who right now is just deathly afraid of storms and thinks that when it rains, that means there's going to be a thunderstorm and then there will be a tornado in every rainstorm, because they had a tornado drill. Sure. And it scared her.
Yeah, or there was a storm at some point in time that scared her.
Right, yeah. Unfortunately, she doesn't remember that one. Yeah, there's one that should have scared her.
Yeah.
And she was only a few months old. But be honest with them. I think you have to tell them the age-appropriate truth. And instead of scaring them, we should be teaching them an age-appropriate lesson about what that is.
Yeah. And I think much like adults, you start with the whys, you know, mm-hmm. why do we have to do this? Because kids are all about, why are we doing this? Why is this?
Yes. But why? Mm-hmm. You should explain to them why you're preparing and how you're preparing and what that means. Again, in an age appropriate way. And then if you have a family emergency plan, you should share that with them or build it with them if you're constructing it for the first time. You can also teach your children about things that you're noticing in your surroundings, as you're going about the normal day, that you can point out to them about preparedness or emergencies. For example, maybe one of your neighbors is climbing a tree to cut a branch off and not doing it in a safe manner, or is, you know, up on a ladder and then leaning way off of the ladder as they do something. But you have to teach them.
Working around electrical lines.
Live electrical lines.
Yes. Digging in certain areas they shouldn't be digging in.
As you're traveling to a mall or a movie theater or a baseball game, you can point out exits and signing and rally points, police officers, firefighters,
security
the things that you
guards.
See, security officers. We were at Target Field to watch the Minnesota Twins on Sunday. It was the first game for our kids to go to, first Major League Baseball game. And the kids were fascinated that there were police there.
Oh, really?
Right? To see that there were, as we walked in, they're like, "Mommy, it's a police officer."
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of police officers there. But to them, that's not something they see every single day. So they were excited to see right there.
And that's a good opportunity to explain why they're there, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's good with kids especially to take the opportunity when it presents itself. So they have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. So that's a good time to start answering why.
If you're building an emergency kit or you're doing...
You mean when you are.
When you build your emergency yes. kit, if you haven't already, or you're updating it.
Yes.
For those of you, because I'm sure all of you already have one.
Yes, you should already. Yeah, I'm sure you do.
But you can involve your children in that. In fact, you can have your kids make their own kit.
Yes.
My kids would want their own kit. I can see this already. It would have to be in a My Little Pony or Princess purse.
Nothing wrong with that.
Right? It has to be appropriately branded bag for them. Mm-hmm. But they'd want their own kit.
And I think it's great. I think that's a really good way to get them involved mm-hmm. and to get them thinking about things. So not only while you're at home, but when they're not with you, they're going to be thinking about these things because right. you've already introduced it to them.
Another way to get them involved is to have... Once you have your kit ready or updated and you have your plan ready or updated, is to practice that and involve them in that practice. I mean, they're doing evacuation drills at school. They're doing fire drills at school about how to get out. Do they know how they would get out of your house? And do they only think about your house as, I can only get out through the garage or the front door? But really, you might need to go out the back door.
Yeah, or this window here that's right on the first level.
Or here's the emergency ladder in the little folding thing.
Yeah.
If those are still a thing, I don't know.
They might be. I don't know.
We're not prepared to that extent quite yet. But you can do those drills, and I think they would think that was cool.
Yeah. And then I think it's good to keep them involved of like asking them questions. Well, what else could you do? If you couldn't get out there, mm-hmm. where else would you go? If you couldn't hide there, where else could you hide?
Right.
Kids are the best at hiding, by the way.
Far better than I.
Yeah. It's also a good opportunity for parents to get involved with the schools and acquire from the school what their plans are so that when you're making your home plans and involving your children in the home plans, you can incorporate those plans as well.
Mm-hmm. So during the disaster, the emergency, if you've practiced these things, then hopefully your children will remember. But really at this point for you as the parent, as it's happening and your child is there with you, this is really a lot of just this is going to be put on you that your child's not going to know how to act in the moment as they're going through this traumatic situation.
Yep, they're going to be looking at you.
They're going to be looking at you. And so you have to manage your response to that situation, whether you're experiencing it or you're watching it, like you're watching 9/11 on TV, for example. You have to manage your response because your child's going to mirror it. Mm-hmm. So finding a way to not show alarm and to demonstrate a level of calmness when you're with your child is going to be important because that's how they're going to know how to act.
Right. And this is ironically very similar to managing with adults.
It is.
Same kind of concept.
Right.
But more so important, I think, because kids are, like you said, they're definitely looking to you mm-hmm. to how to react to something.
Right. There's also the issue. It's not the issue, but if you've practiced the things that you want your family to do in an emergency, then your children should be doing that when it happens because you've practiced it. So you have a fire in your home, they know to that they can evacuate and where to go.
And where the rally point is.
Right. Where are you going to regroup as a family?
And you ultimately want them to execute those plans without you, without right. having to look to you to know what to do.
Right. The most difficult time as a parent will probably be after the disaster, whatever that is, whether you've experienced it or you've watched it and your children are aware of it. It will be about that post-disaster recovery. And there's a lot of things that can happen here. We expect younger children in particular are going to be anxious and confused and frightened because they've seen the world kind of turn upside down in what they've ever been when in terms of what they've been through or what they're watching. You might find some strange, what'll seem like strange behavior to you. They might regress and do some things that they've outgrown, like for a young child sucking their thumb or looking for their pacifier that they gave up 2 years ago.
Wetting the bed. Yeah.
We actually see that with adults.
Yes.
Post-disaster. The most important thing you can do as a parent during this time is to be there to support your child's emotional needs and understand that that's going to be their response is really going to be centered on that aspect of the disaster. You're going to want to shield them from news coverage of what you've either watched or just have experienced because it's difficult for them to separate. You're watching old news coverage of something that has already happened and is over versus they are watching this and think it's new.
Right. This is happening right now and it scares them that much more.
So it's certainly a situation where you should not be afraid to seek professional help by talking to your doctor, your pediatrician, a child psychologist, a counselor.
At school, they may have people you mm-hmm. talk to.
Right. Or start with your pediatrician or family physician and then have them refer you to a age-appropriate specialist to help with that. That's not unusual. I mean, people that are crisis professionals and others do this because of the things that we all deal with.
Right. It's healthy.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to get ahead of that, too. So even if your child is not responding the way you think that they're going to, it might be a good idea just to touch base with your pediatrician mm-hmm. and explain to them what had happened, and they right. may be able to help guide you through that.
And it could be, so it doesn't have to be the 9/11 event. It doesn't have to be the Minnehaha explosion. I had a coworker at our old employer who was just in a bad car accident. It was the four of them. It was he and his wife and their two children and their dog. And they got rear-ended on the highway, but at high speed, and killed their dog in the accident.
Don't tell me that.
I'm sorry. Their dog was killed in the accident. And then everybody was okay.
Except for the dog.
Yeah. the dog didn't, dogs don't wear seatbelts. So there's that problem.
Yeah.
But, there's some broken bones amongst the family, but like
and
nothing.
Some definite emotional trauma.
Huge emotional trauma. And that was the most difficult thing that his family had gone through. But it was really difficult for his kids to work through this situation. And they had to do some counseling and they had to do some kind of family group therapy to kind of talk through for quite a while about what had happened.
And I don't even think they have to be involved. I've seen it where their parents were involved in something and they just heard about it. So they just know the story. They weren't actually there. They weren't involved, but it's very traumatizing, or it can be.
What we want to end with is it in the end is apparent that all of this is really about making sure that your children are prepared in an age appropriate way in advance, that you practice some things and involve your children in that preparation. You make them accountable as they get older for their own preparation and resilient, their own personal resiliency is really what we're after. During the incident, your role as a parent is to model the behavior that you want your children to follow. And after, it's about making sure that you're caring for the emotional impact that this has had on your child. And again, don't be afraid to seek professional help for yourself or for your children following an incident like that. Do that, and you'll be the best parent that you can.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.